It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie's here, Andy Iannotko, and Alex Lindsay. And we're all waiting for Apple's quarterly results. We'll tell you what to look for, what not to look for, and why not to worry about the Apple is doomed headlines that are all coming out now. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 504, recorded Tuesday, April 26th, 2016. Cheetos in their beards. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak30. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And it is a full panel today, starting with Andy Iannotko from the Chicago Sun. Times, wonderful to see you. Hello, Andy.
Wonderful to see everybody on the panel today.
We love getting together every week and talking about all this stuff. So is Renee Ritchie from iMore.com in Montreal. Nice to see you, Renee.
Nice to see you too, Leo. It's a bright, shiny Apple earnings day and about to watch the market crash and burn.
When will the earnings... I know you'll be keeping an eye on it. When will the earnings come out after the market closes?
The press release usually hits around 1:30 p.m. Pacific, and then around 2 p.m. they start the conference call.
Okay. So we'll keep an eye out. We'll probably just, as usual, although this was supposed to happen yesterday. Normally they do it on a Tuesday. They were supposed to happen on a Monday.
Yeah, and Bill Campbell's funeral was that day, so they moved it a day over so as not to conflict.
I see. That makes sense. Coach. We talked about Coach's passing last week, didn't we? Yeah. Oh, also here, look, from our nation's capital, Alex Lindsay, reporting. Da, 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 da. From the Pixel Core, and you have a beautiful...
I don't know what else to put back there, you know, because I'm in D.C. I actually am in D.C., but you know, I feel like you put a picture behind of D.C. behind you, say, yes, I'm here. That's all I can think of. I could have put a spaceship back there.
You could put anything back there. I think it's kind of nice, appropriate that you signal where you actually are.
I thought that would be the way to go. So.
Alex, please tell me you weren't in D.C. like all weekend, or at least not yesterday.
Why? What happened yesterday?
I was here yesterday.
Oh, because I left D.C. at 4 p.m. yesterday. And we could have had a coffee.
Oh.
We could have. I was here all day.
I just posted something to Instagram. I just pasted an Instagram link to Jason. Probably should have in the Skype chat. I might have been within a few feet of an office building that you were inside, attending to one of my own personal work projects that I don't like to have to explain to people. But
what street were you on?
If there's a northern street and a southern street, I was on the northern street of the two of that office building. One with the, they both have a water feature. One has a smaller one. I was with the one that had the smaller water feature.
Right.
Well, these guys are talking at some sort of spy code. You guys got spy craft going on.
Yes. Bartlett for America.
Bartlett for America. That's the president for you and me. So yes. I now have parody briefly. I don't have parody. I'm sorry. I don't have parody with Renee Ritchie because we got the pink MacBook. But now I realize you have two, you son of a gun. I can never catch
up. I've
got
two hands, Leo.
So this is the one we got for Lisa and nominally for testing before we hand it off to Lisa. She really loves her MacBook. I love the MacBook,
pretty.
Too. It doesn't, again, rose gold is, I think, not as pinky as... pink would be, but tell me about your tests and the benchmarks and so forth.
So I mean, it's got an upgraded Skylake processor with the upgraded Intel integrated graphics, which are okay. I mean, Skylake is the talk to the tick that was Broadwell, so they did the die shrink down to 14 nanometers last year with the original MacBook. Now it's got the new architecture, and it's a little bit faster, 25% faster on graphics. The thing that's really impressive with this, though, is the new I/O. It's just so fast. I'm hitting, I think, 700 and 900 and over 900 on input output, which is scary fast on the SSD chips. So that to me is
it's still PCIe, right?
Yes, it's basically chips on a board.
Chips on a board. It's not M2. M.2 is that? I don't even know what that means. I know we put an M.2 in our PC, and that was seemed like a separate slot than it was. It's still PCIe, I think.
Yeah, I have that somewhere. I have all the details somewhere, but it scores really fast for that. It's about 25% faster on graphics, you know, if you use that. But I put 4K video on this, and it kind of looked at me and stared. And then I did it on the A9X packing iPad Pro, and it just went through 3 streams. So I don't have a lot of sympathy left for the Core M series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having it on the PCI Express bus probably makes as much of a difference as M.2 would. Apple has its own, apparently, Hi, Apple. Hello. Hi, Apple. And that's in the MacBook. It was in the MacBook Air starting in 2013, and I'm presuming that that's what they're using.
They're getting really good at storage controllers.
Yeah. Hi, Apple. Hi. all right. And so you think, now, is it a worthy upgrade for an existing MacBook owner? Probably not.
No, I mean, well, the difference is that if you really love the MacBook form factor and price is nowhere near the top of your feature list, and you were just sort of curtailed by the lack of power in the original, this will get you a little bit over that hump.
If it was like close, if you're saying to yourself, if this only were 20% faster, I could really use it, then this would be the right thing.
Yeah, and again, if money is nowhere near the top of the things that you're worried about in life.
I was shocked when I, you know, this is the top of the line 512 gig hard drive and a M7 processor, $1,849 with tax. Yeah. Of course, we're not.
If you were waiting, though, like if you were waiting to get a MacBook because you thought they would get faster with Skylake, then you're good to go.
Better. What about battery life?
Battery life is an hour better. That's mostly due to the efficiencies in Skylake. It's a more efficiency processor, so you get 10 hours. So before it was all-day battery life where all-day meant 9 hours. Now that all-day means 10 hours.
So you verified that that is, in fact, the case.
I mean, I tried to run it down in coffee shops 3 days in a row, and I closed the place down before it ran out, so I was super happy with it. It'll take a while. One of the problems are if you just bring over an existing system, then there's all sorts of quirks in that. But if you start fresh, that's not realistic because most people don't have a freshly installed computer with them every day. Right. So initial battery tests are fine, but I want to see how it does, you know, a month from now, 2 months from now.
This has no moving parts and is probably the thinnest and lightest out there. I mean, there are others that claim thinner at the edge, but I think nothing is as thin all the way through. You know, the HP Spectre is thinner at the edge, but then when you get to the little middle, because they're all of them are kind of like, you know, boat, it's thicker.
They're all silly thin. They're close to two-dimensional. Yeah, we can't
it's
get
as thin as you need it to be. And at 2 pounds, it's as light. I think extra battery life helps a lot. A little extra power helps a lot. Some of the things people don't like about the MacBook were not fixed. The keyboard is the same, right?
Yeah, and I quite like this keyboard. Other people hate it with a fiery vengeance.
I make a lot of mistakes on it, even though it's my main laptop at home. I still make a lot of mistakes on it. Nevertheless, the keyboard is outweighed by the lightness and the thinness.
My problem is that it's not consistent. So I've gotten so used to, like, when I was using the MacBook Pro full time, it was the same as the keyboard I had on my iMac, was the same as the keyboard everywhere, and I never had any learning gaps. Now I use the MacBook a lot, and it's just different. So then when I go back to the MacBook Pro or to the iMac keyboard, it feels weird again.
Well, that's the problem, because I don't just use one keyboard. Yeah. I use probably a half dozen keyboards day in, day out, so including the iPad Pro keyboards.
Yeah, so any different keyboard is always just a little bit of mental adjustment.
Yeah. And it's just, to me, the short travel, for some reason, seems to affect my accuracy. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is.
I turn off that autocorrect thing almost immediately, too, because it just never gets it right for me.
No, it's always wrong. Yeah. Well, anyway, it's out, and it's there, and it's available. And we got ours yesterday. I ordered it, Mac Break Weekly, rather. I ordered it. So that was a week. Not bad.
And it's in rose gold now, so if that's what you've been waiting for, you can get it.
Pink.
Pink.
Own the word pink.
No, it's not. So the only difference is that the rose, because it's rose, like it's a metallic color, it really gets, it has almost a deepness to it. In different light, it looks coppery, it looks bright pink, it looks deep pink, it looks gold, it looks silver. And that to me just adds a lot of depth to the color.
It is not pink. It's
weird pink.
It's a Chanel pink.
Yeah. I think metallic it's not, pink look, that looks gold, too. Right? Weird. If I tilt it this way, that's gold.
Weird.
So yeah. I think it really, I like it. I mean, it's not bad, and it's not so pink that you go, wow, you have a pink computer. Do you?
And the other one's not yellow. I mean, the other one, they call it gold. So, I mean, whatever. It's just a marketing term for me. But no, I like it. I think it looks really nice.
I've been won over, and I suppose it's the Apple Kool-Aid or something. But that's everything I get now. Even if it's an Android device, I'll get gold. If I can get a rose gold, I'll get rose gold. I kind of like gold.
Yeah.
But you know how it's fad. It's fashion is a fad. The next year it'll be silver. You know, gold is the new black, whatever.
Sapphire or something.
Exactly. And everybody will go, oh, I have to have that. So, lightish red, some people say. Not pink. It's lightish red. All right. We're going to talk about Apple's earnings call, what to expect. Some say this is going to be a bloodbath in the sense that it's going to be the worst quarter Apple's had in over a decade. We'll find out what our panel thinks about that. And an excellent article by Ben Thompson in Stratechery. He calls Apple's organizational crossroads. Apple kind of led the way in organizing its executive team and its divisions along functional lines. But is that the right way to go? Good on Apple for refusing China, not for one, but for 2 years in a row. The source code, the family jewels.
Can we have it? No. Can we have it? No. Can we have it? No.
No. You can't have it. You can't have it. Our show today brought to you... Actually, you know what? We can keep going. I have one ad. Let's do it now. And then that way we could just swing into the show with full force and vim.
We're doing our homework on the first day of the Long Rumble that. Long weekend.
It is. It's like that, isn't it?
We can go sledding all weekend and on Monday, too.
Let's do some homework, and then we can have fun. Okay, boys? What is it?
Sounds good, Dad.
I tried to teach the kids it's easy, hard, hard, easy. It's better to do hard, easy than easy, hard. It's more fun. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yes. In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun and snap the jobs a game.
You were right. It was rhyming right to the end there, and it fell apart.
Well, and every task you undertake becomes a piece of cake, a lark or a spree. It's very clear to see that a spoonful of sugar makes the world go around. Makes the medicine go down. Medicine go down. Down, but a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
Andy Inako is our own built-in rap genius, ladies and gentlemen. We thank him.
They can't sue if we don't use the music. It's just the lyrics.
Really? Is that true?
No.
No. It's just the ritual. I have to say, I didn't think Mary Poppins right away. I thought, that sounds like E.E. Cummings, so that was impressive. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. We know a lot of you are IT pros. For those who are, of course, you know, continuing education, staying up on the latest is very important. For those of you who want to be, getting those certs, getting that information in your noggin is the beginning of a great new career. And in both cases, IT Pro TV is the place to go. IT Pro TV is exactly what I think what you're looking for, certainly what I'd be looking for. Instead of pouring through boring books or going to a technical school that can cost an arm and a leg, you subscribe to IT Pro TV for a low monthly cost, and you get access to more than 1,000 hours of content and new courses added weekly. They've got two studios. They do what we do. You can watch them live 9 to 5 Monday through Friday as they do their new stuff. And course topics include, of course, plenty of Apple stuff, including Mac integration basics, Mac management basics, Apple certified support professional, Apple certified technical coordinator. You can get those certs. But you can study many more things as well and really expand your capabilities and your knowledge from networking to security. You can get the certified ethical hacker cert. Wouldn't that be odd? Just to have, I want that. Learn about crypto, Wireshark, from Apple to Amazon to Cisco, the CompTIA, the ISC squared, of course, all the Microsoft certs too. They're all in there and more all the time. You can watch free live. And they have a chat room, just like us, so you can participate there. But they have so much more when you subscribe, including the virtual machine labs that allow you to set up and run Windows Server and Windows clients on any browser, HTML5 browser. You can do it from a Chromebook. You don't even need to own Windows. They have the practice exams from Transcender. That's worth $109. That's free with your account. So you can take the exam before you take the exam. That's a great way to prep. And because you're paying a low monthly fee, it's very affordable. And because they're geeks and they know the thing they hate, the thing we hate, when it's hard to cancel anything, it's, you know, a renewal thing. So it's easy to cancel because they know, you know, you may get the certs and say you're done. I have to say, though, there are a lot of IT pros who never cancel. They told me the other day that the Harvard University IT department is all subscribe to IT Pro TV because they want to keep their skills up. They do have corporate and group pricing available, and universities galore use IT Pro TV, not just Harvard, but MIT, UCSD, Stanford, and more. Normally $57 a month, $570 a year. We got a special deal. Of course we do. You could try it free for 7 days when you sign up using our code MACBREAK30. Check out their courses, the live stream, the Q&A sessions, which are kind of like study groups. But you'll also get 30% off your account. That makes it less than $40 a month, or if you buy a year, and if you buy a year, there's an advantage to doing that because you can download everything and watch offline. $399 for a whole year. It is an incredible deal. But you have to use the offer code MACBREAK30, and oh, did I mention that's forever? That's not just for the first year. That's forever. I think a lot of people just keep watching IT Pro because the instructors are engaging. Tim and Don and the crew, they're fun. They're funny. And you learn, but you have fun. You can watch it on your Roku, your Chromecast, your Amazon Fire TV. Yes, they have an Apple TV app. There they are at the Twit Studios. Built by fans of Twit for fans of Twit, they say. Go to itpro.tv/MacBreak, MACBREAK. Use the code MacBreak30 to try it free for 7 days, 30% off. We love them. Good friends. And I feel like we've built the business together. itpro.tv/MacBreak. Ryan, let me just ask this question from the chat room. Ryan, 1984 in the chat room, because we had the question on iOS today yesterday as well. I have an iPad Air 2. Is it worth upgrading to the Pro?
Do you use it?
Yeah. Everybody, I think we all say yes, right?
Absolutely. iPad Air 2 is old enough. It's not always just a speed upgrade. It's also the fact that you're getting pen input, you're getting Touch ID, you're getting the larger, you're getting Apple Pay, you're getting new CPU architecture. There's just no reason not to to keep waiting at this point. You're going to get such a big win out of it that it's going to be you're going to be very happy with it.
Yeah. And I don't even use the pen, and I agree, because I never use a pen. Now, if you're somebody like Alex or Renee. Or Andy, you all use the pen. You draw and stuff.
Well, and I guess I don't. It's not that I'm drawing like
cartoons.
When I think about using the pen, it's not that I'm drawing art, you know, pieces of art that I'm going to put on the wall or anything else. What I'm really doing is sketching out ideas. And right. So number one is when people send me stuff, I can very quickly just grab it and draw on it and say, change this, move this over here, and update things and circle them. And it's just so much more organic. The second thing I do a lot of is I draw little sketches to throw into Keynote. Like I'm working on a presentation and I'll sit there and just sketch. Like, this is what I'm going to put in there. And then I just... you know, just drop it in. And those are the things that were just that quick. I'm going to just throw something together just so I had to take a mental note on it was what I just couldn't do with my iPad.
Yeah.
And it's why I carried around a little Wacom, you know, the bamboo tablet. It was so I could do that on the plane. And now I don't need to. It's
yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, for sure. If the pen is the thing, I like the keyboard. Of course, you could use a keyboard with your Air 2, a Bluetooth keyboard, but I really like the keyboard. And let's not forget what an improved screen this is. Mm-hmm. You saw the DisplayMate article. I think we talked about it last week that really said they've done this right. Is this the best? I mean, I'm talking about the 9.7, by the way, not the 13-inch Mac Pro, Mac iPad, whatever the hell.
iPad Pro.
The new 9.7. In fact, that's probably the one I would get. I'm a little nervous about the bigger one. I think it's a little too big for some people. I know a lot of people say, yeah. And I also know a lot of people love it.
If you want it as a primary computer, you'll probably want the 12.9. But if you want an ancillary computer, a secondary computer, then the 9.7 is probably fine.
You know what, I agree with that.
You know what I want to order right now from Logitech? I did not know that you could use the connector on the bottom to charge. And you apparently you can. So Logitech has made something called the Logibase.
Yeah.
Logibase, which is a stand for the iPad that charges, but it doesn't charge. You notice the lightning port's empty on this image of it. It charges through the smart connector or whatever. This stand looks really cool. It also, one size fits all, so you could get it for either the 9.7 or the 13. It really looks like a sleek device. I'm going to order it and we'll have one.
Our review went up, I think, at 3 in the morning. Daniel Bader looked at it for us and he really loved it. He said it's the closest thing to wireless charging for an iPad.
Yeah, exactly. I love the wireless charging on other devices. Just the sensation that you're just simply dropping a device on a place, as opposed to even if there's a connector that's embedded into the stand itself, you're seating it, you're wobbling it, you're making sure it's pushing down all the way. It's just drop it, you're done.
And it works with some cases, too, because... as long as the port is exposed and you can get it to the base, how hard is it to mate it up with the smart connector? Is it just it's got a magnet, right? So it goes it's got a positive.
Yeah, I haven't tried it, but every smart connector device I have used has been stupid easy to.
Yeah, I really like this idea.
And that'll free up your Lightning port for outputs and things like that, right?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, and Ethernet connections.
Yeah,
let's not forget. Ethernet.
We're going to get our computer back, you know, one way or another.
I still think anybody who hopes to make this a full-blown computer really has to think hard about it. I don't think that Apple's correct in positioning it as a laptop replacement. It's an iPad.
My mom just got one. She hasn't set it up yet, but she's replacing her older iMac with it because she stopped using her iMac and she uses her iPad continuously. But she would sit there and sort of peck out emails. And when she saw the keyboard, she was just like, yeah, this is the next. She says it's her next computer.
Yeah. All right. Some people, but I'm just saying it's not a given. It's not for everybody.
We're not running SpaceX off.
I keep on trying to move away, and there's definitely things that I do that I really enjoy. I think it is. I'm like, oh, you know, building certain things, but you run into walls all the time if you're doing any kind of hard, you know, heavy use.
Yeah.
But I think that for my parents, I think it's fine. I think that for my kids, it's fine. I don't think my kids are ever going to really interact with a computer.
Yeah, like, that's a good point.
You know, they're just not used to it.
Yeah, I'm just an old timer, so I still think of computers as the end all and be all.
We're going to be like, back when I was your age, I had a keyboard. I couldn't just talk to the computer and just have it do things. That's going to be kind of
I mentioned before the show started, yesterday we had Bill Atkinson came back. My new personal close best friend, Bill Atkinson, came back to do a how-to. We helped him do a how-to for his photo card app. And we were talking at the end after the show, and... I said, I would love to do something with you about your kind of mindset about engineering and because he's one of the greatest programmers of all time. You know, he's one of those brilliant guys. And he said, well, you have to understand, I'm not really into computers. He said, it's just a tool for me. I want to create. And he is an artist. You know, he's a great photographer. I'm not obsessive. I don't fetishize, to use President Obama's terms, technology in that way. It's just like a hammer. I don't get excited about a hammer either. It's just a tool for the thing I'm really excited about, which is the creation. And I realized that I am not that way. I'm in love with the computers and the technology and the iPads, and it's the things the tools. I love tools. Some people love tools. Maybe they're not great woodworkers. They just love tools. I'm a tool guy, but that's interesting. So I guess I bring that up and saying that it's just clear that people have different what a computer is. Has a different meaning for some people. The reason I'm reluctant to computers is because I'm in love with that, and an iPad is just too constrained for me. But your kids don't have that feeling about it.
I think the thing you have to ask yourself is, are you the kind of person that likes to go to Staples and Office Depot and Home Depot?
Yes.
I love it. Like, yes. I just love going and looking at all the things.
Yes.
And thinking about the things that I could do with those things. And I never actually do them, but I like to think about
it. Yeah, no, it's all aspirational.
Yeah, exactly.
I like going to tool store. I like going to hardware stores and looking at Makita tools. Give me a skill saw, I'll chop my hand off. I have no idea what to do with it.
I go to hardware stores, so I know how normal people feel when they go into like technology stores, like Best Buy or Apple stores.
Oh, interesting. So you
makes me humble.
Oh, because you don't understand it.
I know nothing about any of them. Some of them spin, some of them cut, some of them poke.
Yeah, right. They all look dangerous to me.
Yes.
I was trying to have a conversation with my mechanic, and he was telling me something about the coils in my
car. Thingamagingers.
And I was like, it doesn't run right. That's what I know. like when I push the gas, it goes blah, 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 blah. And I was like, that's all I know about this car.
Yeah. So there you go. So if you're not fetishized, you know, about computers, like I collect I have in my bag. USB keys with a bunch of different operating systems. Am I going to? I have more operating systems in my bag than I have computers. That's a fetish. That's not real. I collect programming languages. Do I write
programs?
You enjoy
them, Leo.
No, I write small little things to show that help me understand it. But I don't actually, I'm not a programmer. So that's just a different attitude. And I think you're right. I think people who think of a computer as an appliance or a tool, an iPad is probably adequate for them. These are all operating systems. That's a Debian stretch. This one's FreeBSD. This is Debian Jesse. I even have different versions of the same operating system. There's Arch Linux.
This one's pattern unencumbered.
At least I labeled them. For a long time, I didn't know what it was. I'd put it in. I don't know. Oh, this is like a super secure Zeus guard. And this is my PGP keys. And there, it's all in my bag. Like I'm going to use that. But I carry it around with me at all times. You never know. Don't show that. Get away from that. You're mocking me now. So this is the day that Apple releases it. Which quarter is this? Apple's not on a calendar system.
I think this is – isn't this Q1? I lost track. Maybe it's
Q2 2016.
Q2 2016, yeah.
So they're one quarter ahead.
Yeah.
So the second quarter is traditionally not a big quarter, right? Q1 is the big quarter.
Yes, and this is usually like everyone's bought their Christmas holiday right. gifts, and now they realize in horror how much money they spend and then don't buy anything for 3 months.
We would normally expect a kind of a slow quarter, right?
Yeah, but it's year over year that they're looking at. And I'm pretty sure we're going to actually hear this on the call. It's going to say, you know, Apple, you've sold an iPhone to pretty much everyone on Earth, and we're really shocked and appalled that you've shown absolutely no strategy for getting Apple stores onto Mars. So we're just going to burn your stock down.
So it is apparently widely agreed by everybody that their results, even though Apple has not announced anything, that their results, probably what Apple's done is leaked this, though, right?
They set expectations, as they always do. They do like forward-looking statements in the previous quarter, and their guidance led people to believe strongly that they were going to have their first year-over-year. They were not going to exceed year-over-year for the first time.
In January, Cook's sales growth was 1% in January. Cook said at the January call, the last quarter call, he thought phone sales would fall for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. But in general, the market is expecting Apple's worst quarter since 2003.
Well, and I think we need to put in perspective worst quarter since 2003. We need to compare that to what they're talking about is year over year growth, given that I'm not sure what the exact numbers are, but I'm willing to guess that this quarter will equal the yearly income of 2003 in that whole year. I was trying to find it before that came up, but it's not the worst quarter that Apple's had since 2003. It's just the worst year over year growth.
And again, this is predictive because we don't know yet. We'll find out in an hour.
It's sort of like on Top Gear when they show you the Veyron on a track and they're accelerating and it goes from 0 to 100 in no time flat. And then James May starts going, the air is like toffee. The air is like toffee. And the car just, you expend so much power trying to get even just a little bit faster. All your rapid acceleration, which is what Wall Street wants, they want growth. It happens when you go from almost zero to millions. And then once hundreds of millions of people, when there's a billion devices on the market, that growth takes an enormous amount of effort for very little gain.
Yeah.
I mean, and to go, just go back to that in perspective, for 2005, I couldn't find it back to 2003, their quarterly was $3.24 billion. And now it's going to be, what, 50? So just a little bit more.
It's okay.
So, I mean, I just think...
It's not time to panic, is what everybody's saying.
Wall Street will panic.
Yeah, probably
But the stock's going to tank, right?
Or they'll buy on X, because they usually sell when things are good, and then they buy when things aren't. So it's hard. It's psychology, Leo.
It has nothing to do with reality, is the real point.
Well, for investors, it does. Because as well as anybody else that the market, if you're gambling with other people's money and their retirement funds and their stability, it doesn't matter that you recognize that Apple is a perfectly strong company. There's no reason for them for a bad quarter to set them back at all. But you do know that a gajillion people are going to be selling off on based on that. And now the value of your own holdings goes way down. So you have to make the choice based on what the numbers for all of your other investments. Does it pay for you to stay put? and not worry about it? Does it pay for you to buy now that the stock is devalued, or does it, or is this a bad time for your holdings to be suddenly worth 3 or 4% less than they were before?
Now, as tempted as I am to ask you guys for buy sell signals, I'm not going to say that because we do not. You'd be crazy to take any stock advice from me, and I would guess from any of the other panelists. And so we don't want to be in the situation of making investment recommendations. We talk about Apple as a technology company from a user's point of view.
We put our money in atoms, not in stocks. Yeah, we clearly have no strategy. Yeah.
No, we don't have a strategy. We just buy more Apple crap is what we do. So let me give you what the stock market's expectations are. This could be your scorecard because, of course, if Apple beats expectations, even if it's down, it will go up. If Apple is lower than expectations, expect a severe drop in the stock price, I think.
Is that the point spread in gambling?
That's it's the over-under, ladies and gentlemen. Here's the over-under. So consensus expectations, iPhone sales down 18%. Now, that still means they sold 50 million, as you say. Yep. So don't freak out, but 18% drop. iPad drop 20%, and that's on many drops quarter after quarter after quarter. This would be the ninth straight quarter. Mac sales flat, but Mac is a small, you know, unit-wise, a small portion. It's just 4.6 million units. On the other hand, they're expensive devices, so it's a significant amount of money.
And the PC market is down so much that the Mac looks good by comparison.
Yeah, the Mac looks flat is great. Flat is great when you're in the PC market. Profit will be down 18%, a mere $11 billion profit in 3 months.
Tighten them belts.
Remember, last quarter, it was the most profitable quarter in the history of all mankind. Not of Apple, but of all mankind. So it's going to be down because, well, how could it not?
There's never been a quarter more profitable since man discovered gold.
But it would be the first profit drop since, not last year, but 2013, last quarter of 2013. So, you know, they've been on a roll, but all the good things must end. Sales down 10%. I don't know if is that all sales? I don't. And the first quarter sales, let's see, current quarter sales, second quarter forecast $47.4 billion. And first quarter of 2015 was $58 billion. First quarter, the forecast is for first quarter, $52 billion. That's this most previous quarter. And then the advisement Apple's expected to give is another drop to $47 billion next quarter. So that, just so you know, that's what the analysts are expecting. And so what does it mean? Anything?
I mean, it's just, again, it's an acceleration thing. It is very easy to have a hit product that takes off and is growing. The iPhone started on one carrier in one country. And it's since gone on to become one of the most popular consumer electronic devices in history.
If Apple is stagnating, it's still, even if there's a good reason for it, like they've sold devices to everybody who could ever buy one, it's still stagnating.
Yeah, the question is, what's next? I mean, that's the question they already want to know. Like, the iPhone, fine, you could do the iPhone. What are you doing for me next?
Yeah. What have you done for me lately? Yeah.
Apple has a lot of time. Even if they didn't sell anything, they would have a couple years. Given that they're going to keep on selling and keep on making a lot more money for quite some time, they have a lot of time to figure out what the next thing is. They don't have to come up with it next quarter. Obviously, we're assuming they're going to do something in the car area. You know, there is still augmented and VR reality that people are talking about, which will still not make very much, in my opinion, will be kind of a small note for what they're doing. I think that when you look at the car industry, if Apple goes down that path, if they choose to, I think that that's a whole, like, iPhone level growth that's available to them, even with Tesla's success and even with, you know, everybody else. I think that there's a large market that if Apple did it right.
Sure, there's a lot of ifs.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's a big. That's a big one. That's a whole new market. Yeah. So you just don't know. So it's not that there aren't possible upsides. Everybody would agree there's potential upsides. I mean,
I think the only people that really have to worry about this are people that are trying to figure out, is their stock going to go up, and should they keep Apple stock? I think that, and, you know, and Apple may be doing more buybacks or dividends, and all those other things can affect that value. So I think that I think those are the only people that really should worry from a stagnation perspective. Yeah, it's stagnation, but it's at a stagnation at a level of revenue that is kind of breathtaking.
Yeah,
if you really think about it.
And that's the difference between investment and speculation, really. If there are anybody who's trying to get into Apple because they know that they're going to make 10% of their money over 5 years, that's stupid. If they're investing because they know that they're a stable company with not only a great many successes behind their belt right now, but a great many assets to develop in the future, and a management team that isn't willing to just be happy that they're selling the iPhone, that they're also experimenting and trying to decide what they want to do next. It's not something for the average person to talk about. It's really this is like draft day. Nobody who does
it
not
is,
actually,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it doesn't affect anybody who does not work for that company or in that industry. But if you enjoy talking about it as a hobby, you can talk about it. But just don't worry about it.
All right. Well, then let's address Ben's article, Apple's Organizational Crossroads. This is Ben Thompson, who is really, one of the great analysts for us.
He's worked at Apple University.
Yeah. I mean, he's a smart guy. He knows his stuff. He knows Apple. And he's a big thinker. And, of course, a regular on Twit, I'm proud to say. So Ben says, Apple is unique, and I mean that objectively. Forget about products for a moment, about which reasonable people can disagree. Leave aside the financial results, which are certainly unprecedented, and ignore the people you know so well, folks like Johnny Ive or Phil Schiller. Rather, the structure of Apple organization, he calls it the unitary organizational form, or U-form, which is a business school term, sometimes known as functional organization. The organization, the company is organized around expertise, not products. Remember, that was the big reorg a few years back. Where, Johnny Ive now is suddenly not just in charge of the design department, but he's in charge of UI look and feel across the board. So product marketing is one group under Phil Schiller. Instead of having separate silos for marketing, COO Williams is a group for operations. So you don't see in the org chart, you don't see, oh, I'm in charge of iPhone and you're in charge of Mac.
Well, and it's sort of true, but iTunes has its own marketing and its own event team. And Apple, like iTunes and the Apple stores are almost big enough to be their own businesses.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of those things as well. So it's mostly true, but like many things, there are a few exceptions.
And, you know, Ben points out this didn't start with Apple. In fact, Microsoft did this in 2013. Ballmer did this. He says, when Ballmer reorganized Microsoft to be somewhat more functional, I criticized the move. As an introduction, I described how the multi-divisional form, which is how Microsoft used to be, and it started with DuPont in the 1800s. This is interesting. DuPont, which was a small company designed to provide gunpowder. Yeah, they made gunpowder, bombs.
Close to exactly.
But they started to diversify into other chemical stuff. And what they did at first was to do this kind of functional organization, and it failed because it turned out that even though the manufacturer of these other chemicals was similar to manufacturing gunpowder, the sales and marketing was completely different. It was completely different. And so they had to reorganize along divisional lines. They're making paint instead of gunpowder. So even they start making paint because, well, we know how to make gunpowder. It's really similar to make paint. But they realize selling paint is very different than selling bombs. What a surprise. So this, again, Ben with some great insight in here. So the question is this kind of functional organization serving Apple? He says the problem for Apple is that while iPhones may be gunpowder, services, which Apple's moving into big time, are paint. Isn't that true? And isn't it interesting? We've always said Apple's bad at services.
I think they're also bad at iCloud. They're really good at things like Apple Care and Genius Bar. So there's different kinds of
services. Remember,
we're talking about online services, online software, software as a service.
This was the conversation that they had in the last earnings call, right? They said, get ready because services are going to start to be a big part of our revenue.
Okay. They also said a lot of good things about Apple Music.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about the difference between philosophy of different companies, what they think that they're good at. One of the reasons why I think Google is so good at software services, at Google Docs, at the calendar, all that sort of stuff, is that they are absolutely willing to put out a product that they don't think is completely finished, or that they don't necessarily believe is, we sincerely believe this is the best calendar app that's ever been made. They're willing to put out a version that is, here's every single thing that we wanted to do with this release. We've done it. And now it's time for us to watch people use it and figure out where we screwed up. That what they often will do, they'll wire up the software so that they really know what features are being used, what features aren't being used. They'll often actually do a secret beta test where you're using Gmail and you didn't notice it, but a certain button has been moved someplace else or color has been changed. And that's not a global change. They're just testing it with some people. If they're trying to figure out how come people aren't using our wonderful automatic associative calendar feature to automatically create appointments, do they not see the feature? Is there a way we can make the feature more prominent? Or, okay, they see the feature, but maybe they don't see the button. So that's how they manage to get all these services. They're like Apple Maps, maybe, where if they really decided to say that this is the best mapping system we've ever done, it would be falling flat in its face. It's just that they keep iterating. Apple really has to be in the position where they're able to say, this is Apple Music. This is our first cut at it. We've got years and years of plans of it. We can't wait to grow this thing. They can't really do that. They have to have the hour-long dog and pony. We really think it's the greatest subscription music service that's ever been created. And I think that's where they can fall flat on their face.
Yeah, that's in fact exactly what Ben says. He says, you know, when the iPhone is soaring, as it has been, you can ignore these other problems. But now that they're going to be looking to services for significant revenue, it's going to be a big issue because services have a different business model. Services basically are effectively free on a marginal basis. The real costs are fixed, which means that they make money on volume. And Apple's not good at that. He says the problem is Apple's culture is just not set up to excel. Apple values integration and perfection, Andy, which results in too many services being overbuilt and thus more difficult to iterate on or reuse elsewhere. Service releases and software, by the way, are tied to hardware releases. That's not how it needs to be done. It needs to be an iterative process, continual improvement. And Apple's focus on secrecy means many teams, I don't know about if I agree with this one, many teams end up building new services from scratch instead of reusing components. So he has a prescription for how Apple can excel at services. He says Apple's actually at its DuPont moment.
I definitely think they have to rethink how they're doing services. I mean, I don't know if they're at their DuPont moment, but I think there's a lot of things in front of them that they could be developing. But I think that I definitely think that the way services work is frustrating. I mean, I have to admit, I pretty much run my company on Google Docs. You know, like, I mean, everything is organized in that process. And so, and I try to go back and use, you know, some of the cloud services that Apple provides, and it's just very, you know,
they're bad.
Difficult. It's pretty, but it doesn't.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
work.
I think we all agree. We understand, for as users, what the problem is, and what I think Ben has done a good job of is explaining why structurally it's a problem in Apple. Something that's always been a mystery to me. It's like, why? Well, don't you just hire programmers and make it? Don't just fix it.
And it's simple things like I don't think that like they're. a good example is your iPhoto library or your Photos library updating. You know, your stream. And there is no feedback to telling you when it's actually happening. You know, so you want to open it up and you want those photos to be there because you just took them. And you don't know when it's actually going to do that or how that's going to work. And there's no little dial that's saying that it's doing something. And I know that they want it to be just invisible to you. But it's when you're actually trying to use it, it's really frustrating. You know, and I think that this focus on ease of use sometimes really, you know, undermines them.
Ben quotes a book about the DuPont issue called Denial by Richard Tedlow. He says, The top management at DuPont didn't get the problem. They were tied to this idea of functional. And it was the middle management, the people who were really more on the ground and seeing the problems, who were wanting to start reorganizing the company. Top management didn't see it.
And it's also unclear sort of what you gain by what you sacrifice. So like it might improve services, but historically other companies have not achieved Apple's level of success using that model. So would that affect Apple's product business, which, you know, while maybe aging is still peerless in the industry? Like, what effect would that have company-wide? Or do you need two companies, Apple product and Apple services? And then how are those companies coupled? This is one of those things, and I love Ben. Ben is brilliant. But it's one of those things where saying this kind of stuff, super, super easy, implementing it at Apple scale, not easy
at all. And Ben would be the first to say it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's also helpful to have somebody who is not, you know, in the reality distortion field, who's a little bit distant, to say, well, here's what I see. You're actually really right on with what you just said, because the conclusion comes from Ted Lowe. It's extraordinarily difficult to bring out change in a big company. Leadership, it has been said, consists of using minimum problems. So acknowledging, this is going to cause problems, to create maximum positive change. By that standard, DuPont did well, but it could have done better, because only when the firm was on the brink of disaster, in the midst of a crisis produced by one of the worst years in its history, was it able to reconcile itself to the fact that yesterday's structure was the problem.
Well, and I think that that's the case for most companies. I mean, most companies change their culture
when they
have an existential threat. You know, I mean, and you know, it's the way our government works. It's the way, you know, we think that it should work some other way, but that's when you make the change.
Is it too early to say Apple is faced with an existential threat?
No. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yes, it is.
It's way too early.
Way too early.
On the other hand, I mean, you know, if you wait to the, you don't want to get down to your last $100 million.
Yes.
And say, well, we got 3 months of runway. I mean, as Apple has. There's no Steve Jobs working in another company that you could bring in to save the company at this point.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the point that I was thinking of just now, that the only problem that I see for Apple long term is that they're not a company that can, they don't seem to be a company that would let themselves be convinced to do something that's totally out of their nature, because they are, one of their great strengths is that they're so consistent. They really do move not on an individual basis, but on the basis of themselves as a company. They really do tend to move as a focused unit. But that makes it very, very hard for someone with a different mindset, someone with a different attitude, someone from a different culture, to really come in and say, no, actually, here's how we should develop products from now on. Or, yes, this is a cheap as heck $22 gadget that does one little thing. And in many ways, it's tasteless that it's $22 and only does one thing. But we need to start thinking about how we can do things for less than $730 per unit. We have to figure out how to solve small problems and satisfy people at that level, not just at the people at the level of people who have $1,000 to spend on a laptop. And it's going to be just like time and time again, you have stories about successful companies that, in retrospect, had Polaroid decided to go into digital early on and they could have owned the market. But the fact of the matter is, you're making this pitch to this company at a time when they are making money hand over fist with something else. And you have to tell them that making money hand over fist is a problem for you right now. You have to stop doing that. You have to put money into something very, very risky that you don't know how to sell yet. That's never been something that you've ever been really good at. And
like
that's
Xerox
really
with a mouse-based computer.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder about which Steve Jobs is getting a tour of Apple because they're part of the licensing deal for a codec or something is that you get to actually get a tour of Johnny Ive's factory. You get to get a tour of this, that, and the other, and walking away with the idea that a smaller, more agile company whose corporate philosophy and corporate culture has not been defined yet can take advantage, but which any company of Apple size and age can't do. So,
well, and obviously everybody should prepare themselves, because this is a minor discussion compared to the Apple is doomed headlines you're going to see in about three hours.
We're talking. Think about how deep we have to dig to find what any of us consider a viable problem that Apple is facing. We have other companies that are like, wonder which, do we sell the desks or the chairs? Do we let them sit and be comfortable and work on their laps, or stand?
Oh my God, Apple only made slightly less double-digit billions this quarter.
Well, and as somebody said in the chat room, they do have $200 billion+ in the bank. It's not like they don't have a fairly long runway problems.
I think Apple probably spends more time discussing how to deal with the extra cash in the bank.
And that's a bigger problem.
And right now, that's what they're going to deal with, and that's probably what they're going to deal with for the next 10 years. no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, so we're really having a discussion about where do they go in 10 years, because I think that they're going to continue to grow through here. I mean, we're talking about, sure, they might have more trouble in China, but they're building up in India and they haven't even touched Africa. You know, so there's all these, you know, areas that are still, you know, wide open. They haven't sold a phone to everyone yet.
Let's talk a little bit about the car. One of the venues that Apple perhaps is looking for a new market. And there's been a lot of stories about Apple going to Germany, of all places. They have an office there, right?
The office is all over the place now. It's amazing.
Well, not just, but an office designing cars.
Yeah.
They have offices designing cars all over the place?
Well, I mean, the cars are going to be interesting to roll out because it's not just like a computer or a phone. The phone, you have to get FCC approval, absolutely. But to put any significant car on the road, it takes a lot of, you know, interfacing with those countries.
Apparently, Daimler had been talking with Apple about an iCar. And according to Handelsblatt, which I just like saying the name of, Handelsblatt, Daimler rejected Apple's overture to jointly design a car. So did BMW. So the German manufacturers apparently are not interested in partnering.
Well, I mean, this is the very similar. You know, Verizon turned Apple down when they wanted to Apple had this idea of this phone, and they wanted to control. It's the same thing. They wanted to control the user experience. They wanted to control the data, and Verizon was like, no one's going to do that.
Yeah, and at the time, Apple was not known for being able to make something like a smartphone, but they certainly were able to show that they could do that. But the phone is not a car. Apple, I mean, building a car might be a challenge, yes or no?
You know, I think it's definitely, I mean, I think they're both very complex. You know,
so, it's like the Razor before the iPhone.
Is a car less complex than an iPhone? Maybe
I think,
it is.
I think the issue is that the stakes are higher. So when your iPhone crashes, it's not as big of a deal
yeah,
as the
that's
one car
true.
Crashes. So I think that...
Well, there's a lot more metal. There's a lot more... I mean, it's more expensive to build a car, obviously.
And there's more systems.
Yeah.
Yeah, and each one of them has to be... is regulated, and each one is a safety thing. But also, it's about they don't know how a consumer reacts to a consumer product that they climb into. They know how to design something that people hold onto and put in their pockets and have that sort of contact with. But a person's relationship with a car is a really special thing that they have to really get worked out.
Right.
And there's so, as with any time we talk about Apple car rumors, there's really almost any reason for anything. One of them could be that they hired a team that could deliver expertise that they didn't have, but this team said, yeah, we really don't want to live in California. We want to live here where all of our kids are in school, and also we have the resources that we need. You're going to buy us a nice pretty building with one of those hot and cold water dispensers, and we're not moving.
I think they're probably emboldened by Tesla, because Tesla had no experience building a car either. Of course, it took them 10 years. But Apple's willing to go for a long time.
Well, and I think that also the pre-orders for the new Tesla tells you that there's pent up interest in something other than what is coming out of Detroit or Japan or anything else. I mean,
Tesla was a Lotus, wasn't it?
It was. It was a Lotus Elite. They didn't. Yeah. They just made the drivetrain, and so they did it incrementally. They learned how to do that.
Yeah.
Right. And then they made a very, very expensive Model S and then a very, very expensive Model X. And then they started looking at, as was their plan all along, a more affordable car.
You know, Apple helped make a Razor, and then they made an iPhone that had no 3G and no GPS, and then they made a better version.
Oh, I see. When you're talking about the Razor, you're talking about that horrific iTunes phone.
Yeah.
I mean, that was terrible.
The first one. It was terrible.
The Rocker. Weesh.
Well... How much did they help make it? I think they just write code for the chipset that would actually let it play content from iTunes.
From plays, yeah, fair play.
But it was clearly designed to get them a toe in the water, right? To kind of understand this business, I would bet.
Which is sort of like CarPlay too.
Yeah. I think we know from people who have been interviewed since then that Jobs hated that phone. It's hard to get any indication that Apple decided to develop that phone with the idea that they're going to have a partnership with Motorola. So it's possible that they did do. It is certainly possible that they did it with the idea that we're going to have a close relationship with Motorola, and we can ask them lots of questions and get because they're trying to woo us into making a special phone for them. They will give us all kinds of data that that only Motorola has about markets, about penetration, about networks, about efficiencies that will help us build an iPhone. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
There's also that fear that Alex was talking about where you see that people's music listening is moving from unitasker iPods to multitasker converged devices, and people are carrying their phones and will they want to carry a phone and an iPod. Mm. So if you can start getting onto phones, even if it's rudimentary in the beginning, it's the same way like you can start getting into cars, even if it's through a CarPlay system, it helps move them into the general ecosystem better.
I don't know. I think it gets them into the social ecosystem, which is valuable. It's underestimated how important it is to just have your executives and your engineers socializing with and talking to executives and engineers from other industries and other companies, because that's how you get a really deep understanding about how a certain business works. I don't know exactly the reasons for doing the Rocker Phone. Particularly, I didn't understand after I started using the Rocker Phone. I got my loaner unit, but I don't know. It's also possible they're trying a flag about if we don't know what we're going to do with phones yet. We're definitely developing something we don't know what we want to do yet. Let's try on an experimental basis what it would be like to write software for someone else's hardware product. Like, could we simply add iTunes functionality and create something like CarPlay for phone devices, so that if anybody wants to have iTunes compatibility, we know we will quickly be able to build them what they need for that. Who knows? But there's just so many variables associated with this. It's building a car is going to be so difficult, but not just because of the complexity of the actual thing they're trying to build, but of who Apple is. Tesla is an unfounded. When they started making cars, they were a brand new company that never shipped anything. So they could make a huge win by simply saying, "We're going to build you a really expensive luxury sports car that accelerates like stink. It's like you will blow everybody else off the line with this because it's a purely electric car. And also, if you are a true car nut, if you are a true motor nut, we will give you a really cool electric car that doesn't look like it started off with a golf cart or something bought at Toys R Us. Then they built that into, we're going to build a luxury car that's a practical sedan that's also going to be appealing to people who, A, have lots of money, and B, appreciate being one of the first to have a practical electric car. And now it's three or four generations, and they could just build and platform as they go. What would happen if Apple creates an Apple car? They are not, and design it with the intention of selling it to consumers, and they designed it the way they designed the Mac Pro, where, okay, we've built you a cylinder, a tube, and we're gonna try to impress you with the cooling system, because we know that the thing that really gets you all excited about spending $3,000 on a powerful computer is the cooling system and this wonderful tubular shape. And whereas the car people are going to be like, we absolutely don't care about the manufacturing process you came up with for making those fenders. We don't give one quarter of a damn that how much recyclable materials are going into the tires. We'd use this to drive to work every single day. We spend 2.5 stinking hours on stinking I-93 every five stinking days a week to try to get to work and back. And you have given us something where whenever we tell you that this isn't good for us, we don't enjoy this, or we think this is ugly, you want to show us a video of a head on a white background talking about chamfer angles.
Yeah, I think the battleground for cars, I think, is pretty well defined at this point, and that is that they have to be self-driving, they have to be electric. I think that there's definitely a market there somewhere that wants the other stuff, the one that drive their own and have gas cars. But the growth market is in those two areas, and I think that everybody knows that at that point. What Apple has to do is implement that well, and then they can add all the design. And I think that, I think that that is where we're going to continue to see growth. And right now it's very disruptive because you've got a bunch of manufacturers that are trying to figure out, they're in the same place that Apple's in. So if you look at Detroit or you look at Japan, they're trying to figure out, in Germany, like, how do I, move into the new market that I know I have to be in, but I can't figure out how to get out of the market that I'm in, and I think that that's going to be something that we're going to see, so it is a disruptive moment where if Apple's going to get into this market, it's going to be in the next, I think, probably the next 5 or 6 years. I don't think it needs to be any faster than that, but I think that after that, I think we look 10 years down the road and, it's going to be mostly electric and mostly self-driving. I think that because I think people have especially when you see that groundswell of what happened with Tesla, you know, people don't want to drive anymore. They want to text, you know, and they don't want to, and they don't want their hands to smell like gas. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with it.
But boy, that's really living in the future, because it's easy for us to say, oh, this is exciting, but that's years off.
Well, I mean, it's not that far off. I mean,
I'm buying one. I'm not saying I'm not into it, but I feel like that's going to be a long way off.
Well, let's just say the people who buy new cars. You know, like there is a, you know, when you're looking at where is your next market going to come from and how is that going to look, you know, there's definitely a group of people that, I mean, probably your largest group of people that are going to buy them for their own individual use are going to be looking for that, you know, and I think that, you know, my kids are older than 16, and my older kids are older than 16, and they have no interest in driving. You know, they drive a little bit here and there, but it's not interesting.
It's the car makers cry.
Yeah. Well, they don't want to drive. They don't identify themselves with their car the way we did when we were younger. They identify themselves with their Facebook page, you know, and so it's a much different view, and that is what's coming, you know, and you know, so I think that is a huge shift, and it creates the instability that's required to move into the market in a way that hasn't been available probably for the last 20 or 30 years.
Well, that raises another problem that really hadn't occurred to me before. If that's true, what you're describing, people who don't have an emotional connection to their car, they just want to Facebook while they get from here to there. Apple has never really made the statement that we make practical, functional. We sell all millions and millions and millions of these because they're simple, they're practical, they're functional, they're not terribly exciting. It's always because we know how to create a device that people will actually form an emotional connection to and an emotional commitment to. So if that's true, then they might be giving away one of their biggest advantages by trying to build a true self-driving car. I do think that there's a difference between self-driving and simply assistive car technology. I think assistive car technology, we'll definitely see it almost everywhere in the next 5 years. We already have, I think, legislation that says that every car has to have some sort of collision avoidance technology built into it, even as simple as a front-facing radar that if the person driving the car does not stop in time to avoid rear-ending the car in front, it will stop the car itself. We can get 95% of the way with technologies that can do things like hit a turn signal to merge onto I-95, and from the point at which you enter the on-ramp to the point at which it's time for you to start to enter local traffic again, it's doing all the lane changes, it's keeping up with traffic, it's doing all this sort of stuff for you. That's 95% of this is solvable, but the last 5% is the stuff that kills people if it's not working.
Right,
but that's why I don't think we just can't. I'm not comfortable predicting when we'll get like a first 100% self-driving car.
Well, I don't think we need to. I think one of the problems that Tesla and Google and all these other companies have is they're trying to solve that last mile, when most of us would be really happy if it just got on the highway and I didn't have to think about this anymore. Like most of us don't care about going from the highway to my house. What I care about is the hour and a half I'm going to spend between, you know, Corte Madera and, you know, the Presidio. You know, like that's the, you know, yeah. That's where we, you know, are trying to, that's what we're really trying to solve for most of us. And I think that, you know, they're trying to solve a problem that I think they could solve iteratively over a longer period of time, you know, than trying to make it completely self-driving.
Yeah. But the other question is, so if they're going to enter into a market that's really completely new to them, the phone was not completely new to them. It was a type of computer with a smaller screen. The iPad was not totally new for them, all this sort of stuff. Why would they pick cars and not anything else? Why not create cookware? Why not create housing construction
oven.
Systems? Yeah, with oven addition where you can never get the door open because it's made out of 18-karat gold, or sorry, rose gold. There's so much about that that's puzzling. And here I'm not saying that any of this stuff is ridiculous. It's that I'm in one of those positions where I have to be humble and admit that I have no idea why they would be really interested in doing a car. I have no idea why a company like Apple would even think that if they're pursuing that because they think it's an interesting product or an interesting problem to solve, I have no idea why they would think that a car would be the most interesting way to create a transportation product that's poised to take over the next 10 years. I just don't have no idea. We've talked about this before, that I think that if they were to create a $5,000 two-person electric vehicle, something like an electric motorcycle, but more key towards people who want to just ride safely between 5 and 20 miles from their house, that is a big idea. That could be revolutionary. That could sell to a lot of people who were, like you say, are not terribly interested in buying cars anymore. An electric car seems like such a boring idea to me.
Well, I think that when they started doing the development, I think it wasn't probably as boring as Tesla has made it. You know, I mean, because they're figuring this out. But I think that when you look at what market you want to go into, typically what you're looking at is what's broken and something that I think I could fix. You know, and cars are, you know, kind of backwards. I mean, they haven't changed very much for a long time. You know, the idea that they're burning up all this gas while they're just sitting there, it's kind of insane. The interface hasn't changed in a long time. It's very similar to cell phones, you know, where nothing had changed and there was, you know, and so it's easy, you know, it's easier to disrupt. I think TVs are another place that are easier to disrupt, although they, I don't think they, you know, I think that's something that Apple's probably continues to look at.
Really? You think so? That wasn't just some stray?
No, I think that those are, I mean,
I'm sure they're looking at a lot of things.
Oh, I think they're looking at it, but I mean, I got to tell you, I would just want one TV to do everything. I'm tired of all, like, I pick up this controller for this and this controller for that and this controller for this and I can't get this to work. And, you know, it is so effed up.
So here you are with a product that's inside your home already, a way to integrate so many different gadgets and services that Apple is really can address without having to change any laws anywhere. They don't have to hire a 23,341st lobbyist to work in Washington for the interests. It's again, an electric car is just, here is a car. The old fashionedness and the wrongness of the car is based on how we design every town and every city to be beholden not to human beings, but to automotives, to automobiles, that we are giving up so much real estate to roads. We're giving up so much real estate to parking of cars. The revolution could be, let's try to create a world and create cities in which every single major road has one green lane for every two vehicle lanes on it. And that's a big idea. That's incredible. That's something that's worthy of the attention of somebody who knows that they have $200 billion and they could be an unsuccessful company for a mighty long time until the cat aliens arrive and enslave us all before they would run out of money. It's just a boring idea. It's like the Apple Watch. It's a product. It's one of those. You can a computer for your wrist. Sure. Can we build this?
Yeah,
let's do that. And now, congratulations, you made one of those. It's not a new one of those. It's not a different one of those. It doesn't emphatically solve any problem that anybody else hasn't solved in a less pretty way, but just as easily before. But you made one of those. Good for you. And it's a very pretty one of those, too. That's why it would be, I don't know, if I have no idea what kind of car, if Apple is going to make a car, I have no idea what kind of car it would be. If it is something like we looked at Tesla and we decided to build one of those, boy, would I be disappointed.
Yeah. But it's, well, cars hard to think of something new. Alice Cooper loves the Apple Watch. Take a look. Here's Alice playing golf in a weird Johnny Ive golf universe. You do the walk of life. Perfect day, Apple Watch. So Alice Cooper now joins the list of celebrities. Plug-in Apple products.
You know what I noticed, though, that you see a lot of celebrities who like were wearing them for like the first 2 weeks, but
then it disappeared, didn't it?
But the thing is, Jay Leno is definitely an Apple Watch fan because he had this. I watch his YouTube channel. I love his car videos. And so he had this gorgeous Seiko, like Speedmaster or whatever watch that I had to look up because it was so pretty. It's like a $3,000 watch. And now I never see a video which he does not have his Apple Watch stainless steel with the serpentine band around.
Interesting.
It. So
somebody like him, I would guess, has hundreds of watches, right?
Yeah. He controls all his cars.
He's like Ray Donovan. He pulls out his watch drawer and has to decide what is he going to wear today. But if he stays with the Apple Watch, that's interesting. That's telling.
You should call him and ask. I bet he would return the phone call.
Jay.
There's so many stories of like a reviewer
calls you back.
of, well, I'm talking like a reviewer writing something about the show, a show he's done, and then getting a phone call back from him to talk about the thing.
Hey, this is Jay, and I just, that'd be pretty funny, actually. He's not that busy. He's got a little time now. There have been a number of articles about the Apple Watch because it is the one-year anniversary, right? Or this week was the one-year anniversary, including a Gizmodo article titled "My God-Awful Year with the Apple Watch,"
that's not a clickbaity.
That's not clickbaity at all, is it?
That just sums up the present. That's all.
Engadget, a little bit more straightforward. The Apple Watch, 1 year on. Now, come on, Engadget, you got to step up your game a little bit.
It's funny because like my sister still wears hers every day because she gets pages for the hospital floor that she's on. My mom wears it every day because it lets her answer phone calls and texts when her phone is in her purse or in a different room. My best friend wears it every day. My boss wears it one of my bosses wears it because he can control his Tesla with it or at least turn it on and things. Yeah. And the people around me are still wearing them. I don't have any, and I'm infectious. Like people around me will just like,
yeah, your enthusiasm for it probably. Yeah. Helps.
Yeah. It goes over. Yeah. But I mean like I've seen less tolerance for gadgets over my time, too.
Yeah. Devendra Hardawar writing says, the best thing I could say about the Apple Watch is I still wear it. That's true. If you still wear it, that's a pretty solid recommendation. Unlike, you know, a lot of things like a computer, a watch is something, you know, that's pretty personal.
If I leave my Apple Watch behind in the morning, and I've done it like once or twice, it's just as bad as leaving my phone. I look at it, I don't see it. I keep looking at my wrist and it's not there, and I get upset every time. And all these little things that I've gotten so used to, like the notifications, and I have Authy on it. And I just, my patterns of behavior are built around it now. And I think it's probably the most important device I have other than my phone, which sounds ridiculous because I can't do anything nearly what I can do on a Mac or iPad on it, but it just became part of my behavior.
Yeah, for me, I think that the being able to just get Slack notifications and text notifications is pretty much, and also having my phone sit around and have it ring, and I, you know, my watch is telling me that somewhere my phone is ringing.
Right.
You know, I think that it doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. I think that it has a lot of room to grow, but those features by themselves are enough for me to just not wear a regular watch again or any other watch because it ties into my iPhone well.
Devendra does go on to say, I still can't recommend the Apple Watch. It's a device for a particular lifestyle of digital addiction. By its very nature and price, it's just not for everyone. I think I kind of agree with this assessment, but I wouldn't call it an outright failure as so many have. Analysts estimate Apple sold about 12 million. So just by sales alone, it's not a failure.
So just like today, Apple announced that it had a bad quarter.
Right.
There's a different definition for an Apple bad quarter.
Right. 12 million watches means it's the most successful.
Most companies would give their IT for that business.
No, a week after they released it, you could actually go into the store and buy the model that you wanted. All right, I'm sorry.
The price drop helped. According to one study, it goosed sales. This is from Apple Insider. Goosed sales 250%. This is actually Slice Intelligence. Slice knows because I use Slice. It's an app that tracks your purchases and then tells you when they're on their way. But they also get some really valuable information about what people are buying. Slice also said the iPhone SE is popular among people moving away from another operating system, mostly Android. Apple's nylon bands performed well, 60% of first-party strap accessory sales. And extra band sales among buyers who purchased the accessory now stand at 1.3 bands, down from 1.6 in March. That's when Renee bought about 3,000 of them and really messed up the statistics.
Oh, I just got this one, Leo.
What's that one?
See it?
Leather?
That's the Hermes Feu. Feu is French for fire.
Feu.
It's quite nice. I was much more impressed with it than I thought I would be.
Good. It's Feu.
It's Feu.
Feu.
Well, I think that a lot of things that we think of that are not big successes that Apple has, you know, they turn out to be, you know, there's a certain level of inertia that Apple has, you know. So the maps, you know, were a disaster when they released them, but I think the number is something like 60% of iPhone users are using it,
right?
You know, because it's what is installed, you know, and so it overall was successful. I think that when you look at the Apple Music, you know, they're doing okay. You know, I mean, they may not be doing the number that they had talked about or what everyone wanted to, but I, what if I had to choose between, I mean, I have to admit that I test a bunch of these, so I have a lot of them, but choosing between like Spotify and iMusic, the only reason I haven't dropped Spotify is because I haven't moved all my playlists over, you know, and there's not anything that it adds that that music doesn't do. And what music has is I can sit there and just say, I want to listen to a song, and it just,
yeah,
you know,
with
just
the happens. Exception of a few artists like Beyonce, streaming music services are pretty much a commodity. They're all the same, right?
Exactly. And that's, yeah, that works to Apple's advantage. If it's a little bit,
it's built in,
you know, marginally easier.
Well, use it. Yeah.
You know that, you know, and so, and I think that the watch is in the same respect, they don't have to, it's not explosive, but it's still something that, you know, it's part of an ecosystem that Apple can continue to develop. And I think it gets into the same thing with the car, is building this ecosystem of all the things that we kind of touch a lot is useful for a company like Apple, where the ecosystem is everything.
You know, and the iPhone SE, not a huge seller, you know, like 4% of the overall sales or something, but it's the right phone for a certain segment of the population. And I'm sure for Apple, it's still a $1 billion business, and it's fine, right?
That's the thing with growth. When you start hitting really large numbers, you don't accelerate anymore. Like, you're like going to Verizon was a big jump for Apple. Going international was a big jump. Going to big screens, going to China Mobile, these were all big jumps. Once you've done all those, there's no, like, again, I joked, but Apple Store is on Mars. You can't do that. So what you do is you start segmenting your market. And they said, I think it was 30 million people bought the iPhone 5S. And that's, you know, compared to Apple numbers, that's not a lot. But compared to most phone manufacturers, and especially the amount of profit that generates, is ludicrous. So if Apple can have the smaller phone for those who want it and start to break out really valuable niches, then they grow that business, maybe not exponentially anymore, but incrementally. And again, at Apple scale, that's a lot of money.
Well, it also keeps the weeds down, you know, so from Apple's perspective. I mean, you know, like by, you know, continuing to push that segment that was profitable away, you know, it means that every other manufacturer has to live inside of this world where there's not, you know, they're working on razor thin margins. And as Apple does that, it puts a lot more pressure on everybody else making phones. And I think, you know, they'll continue to do that, you know, and not being left out of something. I mean, I think, you know, Microsoft, thought that the internet wasn't going to be what it was, you know, and stayed out of it. I think getting
into the watch is also protecting the space.
But, you know, making a watch is partially, I think, just protecting the space as well.
Hey, I saw some good news. Jim Dalrymple is going to do a big party with you, Renee Ritchie, at WWDC next month.
Yeah, it's one of those things where Jim calls you up and he has that laugh and then he says, we're doing a party at WWDC. And you go, yeah, of course we are, Jim.
is it first? Have you guys done this before?
So Jim has run the Beard Bash, not Beer Bash, which is what Apple runs, but Beard Bash, which is a D, for the last 3 or 4 years.
Love it.
We did an iMore party 2 or 3 years ago, but he was looking to expand. He's traditionally done it at a smaller venue, but he wanted to do it at the Mezzanine, which is really, really big. I think like around 1,000 people big. So we decided to do it together, and he's traditionally done karaoke, which is like great for the Daniel Jalkuts and Gene of the Apple space, but he wanted to have like really big bands. So we have Department of Rock and Airplane Mode are going
to
be there.
Oh, fun. I've wanted to see Airplane Mode for some time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're great. It's Dave Wiskus and Joe Chaplinsky who they are Apple. They'll hate me for saying this because they're actually rock stars now, but they came from the humble roots of iOS designers.
Right.
They've got apps on the App Store. They've assembled a great band.
That's going to be a great party. How do people get invitations to that there party?
So we're going to do it in blocks. Jim is taking care of that, but we didn't want it to be one of those things where you announce all the tickets and then people are still asleep in one or another country and then completely lose out. So I believe starting in a couple days or so, and Jim wanted to wait until people actually knew they were going to have tickets for DubDub, because for some people, that's the deciding factor
whether
they go or not.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So that was last Friday. So he's got all that set up now. And then over the next week or so, I believe he's going to be releasing blocks of tickets, and then he'll tell people in advance and they'll be able to reserve. And then it's just, once you have your ticket, it's first come, first serve, because bouncers and fire marshals ultimately decide how many people get in. So if you do get one of the tickets, just come early and hopefully it'll be a lot of fun.
I kind of stole your pick there. I didn't realize I was going to be your pick, but that's going to be a good party. I'm really glad to... Is there a website we should go to? Should we go to loopinsight.com or where?
Yeah, we're going
to
have it on Loop. We're going to have it on iMore. We'll have it up on both of them. Okay. I'm sure it'll be on Facebook and all the other. As soon as the tickets are available, we'll have all that up.
Right.
And there'll just be an app in your Apple wallet.
Renee, is it true that Mark Gurman knew that you were going to be hosting this party before you did?
I can't confirm or deny, but he probably has a multi-part series on it up somewhere already. If Mark's there, I hope he comes too. He's awesome.
That has the beginning of our pick segment. And I'm going to say Renee has done his pick, right? Unless you have something else you want to talk about.
I was good. We usually have an ad break when I scramble to get
I know. I know. It's taking you off guard today.
So, the problem is I actually left it behind, but I will probably do it next week. But Apple's got this new section in the Apple stores that feature photography accessories for the iPhone.
Ah.
And there's a lot of really, really, and I won't spoil it, but there's a lot of really, really good stuff in there, from adapters to floaters to tripods. I mean, there's just they're doing a really good job at curating that collection. I'll have a couple picks.
Cool. In that collection. Cool. Mr. Alex Lindsay, you have a pick for us?
Yeah. So last week I was doing it was all VR, all VR all day, and so we were streaming from NAB.
Three Ozos. No, I couldn't. I was there very briefly. Yeah.
It was actually the first. It was the first multi-camera 4K 3D spherical live stream. Wow. So and we were doing that while NextVR had an empty truck without any wires that was the first truck evidently, but wow. Ours wasn't a truck, it was a trailer. So anyway, but one of the problems that we had was putting graphics on it. So the problem you get into with spherical is how do you get the graphics to look normal when you have the goggles on? So you know, you put whatever you're going to put on there and you have to basically stretch all of your graphics out so that you have like a nice little thing floating here and it looks normal when your DK2 is on or your Crescent Bay, but you know, it will look all bent when you actually look when you're actually working with it. So one of the things that we use to add those graphics, is something from Dashwood Cinema Solutions, dashwood3d.com. And Tim Dashwood makes a lot of different plugins, but one of them is the 360 VR toolbox. And it does a lot of different things. You can reorient your sphere. Sometimes you shot it, you know, the wrong way. You can, deal with fisheye sources. There's a lot of things that you can do there. But what we use it mostly for is A, to place flat elements into our sphere, as well as to be able to look at this stuff. So you can be working in Final Cut and actually look at it inside of your DK2. So it is it's a great little plugin. I mean, I think this is the best one out there right now. And so if you're thinking about how do you solve this problem with adding graphics to your VR production, and you're on a Mac. This is, in my opinion, the best solution.
I feel like Alex has now moved onto another plane. And then I'm like a dog trying to understand a human. I just...
It's cool.
It's nice, Alex. You want to play Frisbee? I'm sure it's cool.
Are you saying it's a camera that takes pictures, but you don't need a roll of film? What?
And it takes pictures all around you.
What's
all
your
the
verdict?
Time, on, but without any film.
What's your verdict on the Ozo? Are you working for Nokia? Are you? I mean, can you talk honestly about it or not?
Yeah. So we are working with Nokia. Okay. So
I don't want to get in between you and a.
No, absolutely. So, you know, we're working with Nokia. We're also, you know, we do a lot of VR work. So with a lot of different people. So,
are you going to buy that, you think?
Would you buy one?
You have bought one. Okay.
Yeah, so I have a
I was, I'll be honest, a little disappointed with the image quality, I thought.
Well, the image quality right now is partially also limited to the technology to get it
stitching.
To your...
Yeah.
Also just the technology to get it to your headset
is
a limitation because, you know, we're kind of stuck with, for streaming, we're kind of stuck with the 4K. And even that, I mean, the streaming 4K video takes encoders that, you know, would cost a Tesla there's an Alex and then there's a Tesla and the Tesla that's an increment of about $100,000 and so each one of those encoders costs a Tesla and so having those so getting that technology, but what you really want is 4K by 8K, you know, so you have stereo 4K, and that's still probably a little ways away as far as bandwidth, as far as the technology to support that. So all of those things are still, you know, kind of, you know, working their way through it. I think from, you know, we use lots and lots of different, you know, VR tools and VR cameras. We built rigs, we print rigs, we do all kinds of other stuff. But when it comes to just like, I want to go out and shoot some footage, the Ozo is the most, you know, production ready to do that. You know, I was, over the weekend, I was driving through Maryland with an Ozo because that's what everybody does, right? I decided to stop at Antietam, you know, which is a battlefield.
Neat, Civil War battlefield.
I went out into the cornfield and I set down the tripod and I.
Ooh, where can I see that video?
I don't have it done yet.
Why? Because it takes 4 hours to stitch every minute.
It does. Well, I'm on the road, so it does take some horsepower to do it correctly. So, But anyway, but I will put some stuff up. I'm going to probably stop at Gettysburg over the weekend. And so,
if you'd shot it with a Theta S, you'd have it up and running in no time.
Yeah, and it'd be a postage stamp compared
it
to
it. Wouldn't look as good, I guess. But I feel like for that price, it's the tool chain isn't there yet.
Well, yeah, and I think that the to shoot that kind of resolution, and the Theta S is great. I mean, I was talking to the Theta engineer and didn't realize that when you put the tools on the Mac, for instance, you can actually stream from your Theta S. You
know, I didn't know.
So
that.
There's a Theta Stitcher that you can download from Ricoh's site, and I haven't got it quite working yet, but it was working at NAB with the engineer. So we're kind of talking, I'm talking through that with him.
Well, let me know if you get that working, because there you go. That's a $350.
But it's 720p. You know, it's not, that's tiny in VR world.
Yeah, I understand.
But when you're talking about an actual, I want to do something like when we looked at the live stream of what we were doing, at NAB, it was the best, in my opinion, the best quality live streaming 360, 3D that I've ever seen. And so it's not that it's perfect, but we're still in early days. And just the fact that you can turn all the cameras on and transport stuff and everything else, that's why we like that. But I think that, the technology is going to keep on moving. There's going to be lots of cameras and lots of opportunities, but we're excited about that one for now.
Cool. Very cool. Mr. Andianako, your pick of the week.
I was in Washington, D.C. over the weekend, and I was using my, Apple's iPhone 6S Plus, which I still have on loan, as one of the cameras I was bopping around with because I wanted to test out a whole bunch of different apps. One of the things that makes the iPhone 6, the iPhones, some of the greatest cameras in the world are not even necessarily how good the pictures it takes are, but the fact that you can keep adding features via the greatest library of mobile photo apps you can possibly get. And one app that I was using a hell of a lot was Slow Shutter Cam. There are a lot of apps that do this sort of thing, and they are called Slow Shutter. The one that I'm talking about is the one you're actually showing right now by Kojitap software. It's got a gajillion reviews, pretty much all of them good. $199. What it does is instead of opening the shutter, exposing the sensor to light, closing the shutter, write a JPEG, it works by keeping the sampling hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pictures and then averaging them together to create a synthetic final image. And I dropped a few of the pictures I took over the weekend into the Skype chat if you happen to grab them. So one of them is to do the sort of things that you've seen there, which is it will mimic the effect of a slow shutter. You can tell it to please keep the shutter, quote unquote, open for 8 seconds or 30 seconds or a minute. So if there are moving objects, they will be blurred and they'll look really, really cool. And if you're doing light painting, if you want to move an LED light through, you can draw things like that there. But it also has a couple of extra really cool things. You can do things that have traditionally been able to do with cameras, such as if you're taking a picture of like a fountain, and they never look cool in a picture because it freezes it, and so you get like a 1/500th of a second, you see this collection of droplets that isn't nearly as cool as what you actually saw. And so that one I shot, that's the World War II memorial. I shot one with the slow shutter cam, one with the built-in camera, and you can see that on the slow shutter cam version, all the water is slightly blurred, so you actually get an idea of the motion of the water instead of seeing frozen shots. The other thing is when you're shooting at night, even an iPhone is, I wouldn't call it useless shooting in super darkness, but it has to just amp up the sensitivity of the sensor so high that it really is like dumping glitter on top of a decent picture. It's just so noisy, it's useless. But with slow shutter cam, because all that noise is pretty much random, it is average. The app is taking, if you leave the shutter open for a long time, it's taking an average of all of these shots. So any pixel that isn't there from shot to shot to shot is probably noise, and that gets averaged out. So a picture like this of the Lincoln Memorial, and it really was exactly, there is no light whatsoever except for on the memorial itself, gets to be not as good as what you get with a real camera, but still very, very little noise, a good deal of tonality. And if a plane happens to fly into the shot, you will get a bunch of little blurs, blips as it flies over the thing. But the thing is, it's $2, and it's like having a lens that you've got in your camera bag, where you will be out and about over the next 2 or 3 years with this camera. You'll take a picture using the iOS built-in camera app that won't turn out really well, and then it'll occur to you that, oh, wait a minute, maybe I should try taking the same picture with slow shutter cam, and then you will get the shot that you actually wanted that you couldn't do with the regular camera app. So my pick is if there's only one thing that I really miss about not having an iPhone in my pocket every day, and that's all of these little tiny apps. I don't even necessarily miss the camera app. It's just the ability to have apps like this. I've been searching and searching for an app that's like this for Android, and the closest thing I've found does maybe 1/5 of the job, and it's all adware supported. So there's always this floating ad at the bottom of the screen, and you're holding your camera like this. You could almost can't avoid but tapping on the ad at the bottom, so you wind up being taken to a web page.
I hate that.
And
Ugh.
It's just, yeah, exactly. And even if this app for Android did 5 times as good a job, I still wouldn't use it because it's just so damn annoying.
Yeah.
But Apple, iOS, you buy for $2, you can have a beautiful app that doesn't annoy you.
I like that. I do. Well, we've come to the conclusion of this fine episode. Now, while you were talking, I tried to install the Theta S Blend. It's called Blender software?
Yeah.
So, now...
The Mac
version. So I hadn't really seen that this existed, live streaming app, and I downloaded the Mac version. I registered the camera. So the first thing you do is you run it and it sees the camera and it registers it. But it does.
You have to hold the power button and the mode button at the same time, and a little live light will appear on the front of the Theta.
Oh, see, they don't give you instructions. So the power button
and
while it's plugged in or while it's not, it has to be plugged in, right? Or no?
You can do it while it's plugged in.
Okay. So and this is the mode button. So they'll hold these both at the same time. It's off right now, but.
Yeah, it'll come on, and the little you should see a little blue live.
Yeah.
Live down there.
Hey, that was there all along, and they didn't tell us.
Yep. Sneaky.
Sneaky. Sneaky Pete's. Now what?
So this is the part where I'm stopped yet, so I'm still working on this part. So what you should be able to do is even open something like QuickTime, and when you open QuickTime, you should be able to see, like if you do a new movie, you should see the Theta... like SV, whatever. Don't use the Theta S.
Okay. So it should show up kind of as a connected...
Like a webcam.
QuickTime Player?
Yeah, QuickTime Player can see your FaceTime, or it can see your...
Any camera. So it should show up as a camera now.
Yeah.
Okay. So view, window, show movie inspector, new movie
recording. No. You're in QuickTime X.
Ah, that's the problem. I'm in QuickTime Player.
I don't know. QuickTime Player might do it, but if you'd go up to the right up under File, and there should be like New Movie.
Yeah.
And when you go to that, you should get a selector. And I don't know whether the old QuickTime will work.
New Movie Recording is the only choice I have.
Yeah.
But I guess this would be recording. Okay.
And then you.
Oh my God.
There you have it.
Oh my God. Now what do I do? It is It is live. It's a live view from the Theta.
Right. And so it works much faster for you than me. I had to restart my computer. I haven't done that yet.
Oh, I just did this while you guys were talking.
I know.
What?
Now, what's more interesting about that is that you could it'll show up as a camera for Wirecast. So if you have Wirecast on your computer, there's also
I could record this and then process it with the Theta streaming stuff.
You could. You could also
Could somehow get this to YouTube so that people could watch it?
You could. Yes, you could. And if you use the
sounds like he has a secret method, though.
Well, no, you just upload it.
I want to do it live to YouTube live.
You should be able to do that with Wirecast.
Okay.
You should be able to do it with Wirecast right now, because Wirecast would be the the input. Now it's only 720p, but it's still pretty cool.
It looks pretty good to me. And I didn't pay $60,000 for it.
Yes. Yes,
it's like cool. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
But now, see now.
So we were wondering if this had the live capability, and so they had a stealth live capability in this all along.
Well, and the big thing that a lot of us are pushing for is for them to open up the right. HDMI, which would also let us stitch 1080p rather than 720p. But see, now, Leo, think about if you wanted to add ads or graphics or anything else, that's where the plugin that I was talking about, it adds it to this view so that it looks normal when you actually put on goggles or you look at it in a spherical thing. That's
it gives you 360-degree ads.
Well, or 360-degree
lower thirds
logos or... You know, whatever you're going to put in there. So, yeah, lower thirds, heads-up displays. You could have things pop up that
nice.
Say, you know, Leo's winning, you know, that kind of thing. All so, right.
Well, there you go. So, it you know, if you have a Ricoh Theta S, the latest version of the...
And if you don't have a Ricoh Theta S,
buy one.
You should.
Yeah. For like, $350.
I promise you, I came so close because I was in town for my niece's wedding. They asked me to shoot the service. I came so close last week to like it's 2 days before I have to leave. If I want to buy the Theta Cam, I have to do it right now. Just the idea of just having this somewhere prominent and be able to shoot 360 video of the service and then just choose whatever camera angle I want.
Well,
after I get back home.
Did you see the photo I put up on Facebook? You should check it out, Jason. You could, if you can,
of the Antietam or
no. This is with the Theta. I took a picture. My parents had a 70th birthday over the weekend. Their birthdays are really close together, so we had this big 70th celebration. And on the what I did is I just took the Theta and I just set it on a table and had the entire family, because it was all my brothers and sisters and all of our kids and everything else. We all just wrapped around the table. And then I, with my iPhone, you know, I logged into my Theta and hit, you know, took a picture. And it's jump into it.
But that's unprocessed.
No, you should be able to double click into it. There you go.
Oh, and I then see. You can move that's around. Right. If you zoom all the way out, it does that. That's right. Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. How fun is that?
Yeah, that was...
But the issue really is you have to go to, theta360.com to view it. You can't...
Yeah. Right now, yeah. But, I mean...
Why I like the video, because at least that works on YouTube and Facebook.
Right, well, I think that there's a way to get these images up there to do it in Facebook, and I just can't quite figure out why it's not.
There must be, huh?
I'd be surprised.
How did you trigger it?
With my iPhone. So you can log into your Theta.
Yeah, you just put it on the table, and then you have the iPhone's
cool
remote control.
Just makes it go away. Right. So it disappears, and so
isn't that awesome?
It's just a cool way of it's a cool new way of taking pictures.
If you want to play with 360 and you don't want to spend $60,000 on an Ozo, these are really an amazing.
You have to. I mean, if you're interested in 360 and you're thinking about it, it is the best way to think about it, experiment with it, take photos, you know, play around with things that work and don't work. Yeah. So
I'm amazed. I'm getting live video out of here. This is incredible.
Yeah. It's slick.
So I have to figure out what I would love to do. Zoom out on it. You're all the way zoomed in on it. Zoom out on my screen. It's full screen now. Thank you. So just leave it full screen. Because then you could see that you're seeing everything. The issue, of course, is pre-stitching.
And if you put goggles on, I mean, if you put you know, your Gear VR or something else on it, it's going to look like web video, you know, like web video circa 2005.
That's unfortunate, isn't it? Yeah.
But, well, that's the cost. But it's available right
it
now.
It looks fine on stream. This is what's really bothering me is this looks very good quality. When I'm looking on the screen, it looks fine.
But your field of view is only going to be a very small section.
You're zoomed in on it.
So it looks fine all the way around, but when you actually zoom in on what you'll actually see, things get much softer. Right. That's the give up. You know, that's what you give up on 720p. Right. It's still cool. And it's live.
And you save $59,000.
There's that.
$650.
There's that. There's,
not but, to know, mention a 4 hour to 1 minute render time.
Well,
can the Ozo do live like this?
There's a piece of machinery that makes that. I mean,
large piece of machinery.
That takes that, that makes
I have a quick pick that is 200 Alex's.
Yes.
If you want to go to lunch with Tim Cook, charity auction at Charity Buzz, currently $135,000. You get two VIP passes to an Apple keynote. Oh, wouldn't that be funny if I bought it and I got to go to the keynote? Hey,
it's only
Tim.
One video encoder.
You remember me?
Bring the Theta with you.
Your worst nightmare is back, and I got a better camera. lunch with Tim Cook at Apple HQ. God, I had lunch with the iTunes guys. It didn't cost me anything at Apple HQ. But this is for a good cause, okay? CharityBuzz.com. And they have other charities, too, with lots of famous people. Does it say what charity this goes to? I'm sure somewhere it does. Mere $135,000 and 18 bids. So I feel we're not done yet. 8 days left in the auction. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Well, I could buy this or my Tesla. It would be, it's this or that. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. If you'd like to stop by and say hi, we have a great live audience. Thank you for being here. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a comfy chair out for you. You can also watch on demand because, really, I think most people, that's how they watch. Because who's got time on Tuesdays? Download it. Watch it at your leisure, audio or video. Twit.tv/MBW or on YouTube.com/twit or... You know, any podcaster, your podcatcher you choose to mention, including all the great Twit apps created by friends of Twit. Thank you very much. And we will be back next Tuesday. Watch, stay tuned. Renee, the any press releases from Apple yet?
Not yet. 10 minutes, I think.
All right. Any minute now. We'll talk about it next week. Now back to work, because break time is over.
We had PAX East in Boston over the weekend.
Oh, fun!
So the subway was packed with athletes, mostly with Cheetos in their beards. Those people are generally like they're like Greyhound lean because they do nothing but like
they don't
sure
get
they
to
have
eat.
Endurance for these things.
Yeah. What do you call them? Cheetos in their beards.
Cheetos in their beard. Well, no, not that I'm saying.
Do I need to look that up on Urban Dictionary?
All I'm saying is like it was interesting compare and contrast because the week before that was the Boston Marathon, and so I'm going downtown just to like do something at the library or just to meet someone, and around every street corner there are like 18 people who are like fitter than 18 of me is not, and just like running in place at 18 miles an hour and just like carrying on conversation, and there you go, and then.
So not Cheetos and their beards, Cheetos in their beards.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.